Now, join the search to the final frontier of space adventure. Admiral James T. Kirk and the crew of the Enterprise take off on their greatest mission. Beyond anything they have ever accomplished before.
Kirk, you do this, you'll never sit in the captain's chair again.
For the one thing that really matters, to find their friend.
Why did you leave him on Genesis? Spock trusted you.
An odyssey to the planet man created. A savage world that could destroy them all.
Fire, Mr. Scott.
The needs of the many outweigh
the needs of the few.
Join the search. Sense the overwhelming power of an adventure that trebles anything that has gone before.
This entire crew seems on the edge of obsessive behavior concerning Mr. Spock.
Sir. Security reports the door to Spock's quarters has been forced.
Star Trek III. The search for Spock.
All right, you guys remember where you were when Search for Spock came out? Because I sure do. So we're going to be talking about Star Trek III, The Search for Spock tonight. Vaj Potenza, who played Mr. Spock age 13, was going to be with us tonight, but he couldn't make it due to a family emergency. But we do have Robin Curtis. You guys know her and love her as Lieutenant Stavik from Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, and Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. But before we bring her on, though, I want to introduce you to my Trekspers that will be on the air with us tonight. We'll start off with Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing all right. Weather's a little bit damp around here, but don't worry. You guys on the towards the Midwest, East Coast will probably get rain and maybe some snow from this storm, too.
A little bit of rain, melt
the
snow.
San Diego took a lot of it.
And we also have with us our, we don't have our trifecta. We have my double play, my dynamic duo from Portland. We'll start off with Paul the Toy Guy. How you doing tonight, Paul?
Uncle Jim, I am excellent today. I am doing well, doing really great. You know, that has maybe been that trailer you just played. It's just like, I don't know that I need to see the movie now. I mean, they really just played everything. That was entire trailer. I mean, the whole movie in there. And did he say a movie that trebles everything that's gone before? Did I actually hear the word treble to describe three things? That's crazy, man. Who wrote that trailer?
Well, that's how they did trailers back in the 80s, dude.
Man, it sounded like a guy who just grabbed, like, a carnival helium balloon and was narrating it. I mean, it was just like, you're never going to believe what happens on the Enterprise this time. It's just like... Why did you leave him on Genesis? It was just crazy, man. That was a good trailer. So, I mean, auspicious that we're going to have a fun conversation tonight. I think we've got a lot of high energy in the room.
It's going to be fun, for sure. And we also have from Portland our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
Jim, I am having a fantastic day. There must be something in the air because you know what I think it is? I think it's the melting of the ice. The melting of the ice has brought out the best in all of us in Portland. And today I get to talk to my favorite Savick, so I'm freaking excited, honestly. It's going to be a good day.
And I got to tell you, I said it before the show. This morning it was 20 degrees here in Vermont, and my daughter and I looked at each other and said, "It's a heat wave." That's how we are up here. When it gets up above the 20s, it's a heat. When it hits 40, you open your windows. It's like completely different from Vegas. And we have with us our special, in quotes, a guest Trekspert tonight, the very own Andy Bray from Tennessee. How you doing tonight,
Woo-hoo!
Andy?
Woo! I'm happy to be here. Tennessee is warming up. It actually, right now, we've got some yards that have snow, some yards that look tropical. It looks like Planet Genesis here in Tennessee. It's what
Ooh,
we refer to
I like
as
that.
Whiskey and banjo weather here in Tennessee.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
Great. Oh, I'm going to rent a U-Haul truck right now just based on that endorsement, and I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Oh, I look forward
we'll
to
right
it. I'll keep the whiskey warm.
Oh,
we'll
my
right
God.
And I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. And let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talk. And right now, our phone number is 646-668-2433. And if you'd like to join the search, you don't have to go much further than your phone. Call right now, and you can talk with the one and the only Robin Curtis, a.k.a. Lieutenant Savick. How you doing, Robin? Welcome to the show.
Uncle Jim. Wow, you've got quite a cast of characters with us tonight.
Yes.
I especially like Eric in Portland. He's a suck-up.
Of course I am. I think the trick Robin sent him must have cleared, so that's good.
I got to work
you
it when I can.
You guys all sound wonderful, and I hope I'm careful in my, you know, we need to say Roger when we're done talking, I think, or something.
We
there's
make it
so
work.
Many of them.
Yeah.
We make it work. So, unfortunately, guys, Von Potenza had a family emergency. We were hoping we were going to have a Spock-Savick reunion, but we weren't able to make that happen. So, Vaj won't be with us, but we have Savick, so that's awesome to be cool. So, Robin, a lot has happened. I mean, last time I talked to you was at Trek Conderoga, and has anything exciting been happening? I know you came up, you were up my way in Vermont too long ago, right?
Wait a minute. Yeah, are we talking, Uncle Jim, you got to be, you know, help us old folks here with the old brains. Now, when you say Trek Conderoga, do you mean the most recent one? When I was there John DeLancey and Jonathan Frakes?
Yeah, we sang happy birthday to Jonathan Frakes when he walked into the room.
Okay. Yeah, no, it was wonderful to be there, and I was only there by virtue of the fact that Brent had been exposed to COVID, I think, is what happened, or something along those lines. No, it's always good to be out and about, guys. You know, I don't get invited out as often. There are so many colorful, talented people in the family now with all the new franchises, and so, you know, coming out to play is really a treat. When it does happen. So I'm tickled pink to be here, and I'm sorry Vaj couldn't join us. You know, he and I were reunited for the first time last year at Trek Long Island, and he is just delightful. You know, for someone who was on screen for a matter of seconds when he was just a kid, he's so respectful and adoring of his experience and the people involved, and it was a pleasure to hang with him again. He's a very charming, smart guy, and still in the business, but behind the camera, not in front of the camera any longer.
He definitely is, for sure. We had the pleasure of talking with him on the show not too long ago, and he was absolutely awesome. So, Robin,
I'm glad. Do
people recognize you? Do they come up to you in public and say, "Hey, you're Savick from Star Trek III," or? Is that kind of, does that happen a lot?
Well, in the old days, it would happen now and again. If somebody looked at me, you know, guys, for maybe slightly longer than might be polite, I would start with, you know, do we know each other? Or you know, did you go to college? But it wouldn't be long, you know, at Oswego, but it wouldn't be long before I would say, gosh, might you be a fan of science fiction and Star Trek? But no, it doesn't. It really doesn't happen these days. People are not surprised when they discover that I'm a former actress because I have all that energy, you know. And I, you know, I've always had ants in my pants when I was a kid, you know. So I'm always entertaining and narrating life and enjoying my friends So anyway, even though it's I've been retired now for what, 27 years. Do you know what I mean? It's still it's always in you that joie de vivre for life, and I think people connect with that, and they're not surprised to find out I was an actress in my previous reincarnation.
Well, I got to tell you one thing: you still rock that Savick uniform. So,
oh, honey,
that was when you were wearing that Star Trek II uniform. It was like, wow, Savick is in the room. So you got that going.
Thank
for
you. You are so sweet to say that. You know, I when it was first proposed to me, guys, I was a little worried that anything less than something up to, you know, Paramount standards, if you will, the studio talent in the costuming and makeup department, you know, might make me feel a little foolish. And that's no besmirchment of anyone, just a concern. That maybe we would be kind of going somewhere we shouldn't be going. And then when I actually committed and the costume was built and the makeup was done, et cetera, it was quite emotional and nostalgic the way people responded. I have to say I enjoyed it and I'm sure I will do it again. I believe I'm going to be on stage in Philadelphia in April, mid-April, as Savick on the Sunday of the convention. So yeah, here and there, Savick will come out to play again.
it was a great moment. Seeing you as Savick was a highlight of that convention.
Oh.
And
before
I turn my Trek spurts loose on you, because I know they're chomping at the bit to get the
Yeah,
coffee.
Let us out, Jim. Come on. Good Lord.
At Trek Conroga, I was doing a panel on Michael Burnham and Star Trek Discovery in the main ballroom where you were scheduled to appear. But you were running late or something, and so they came to me and they said, Uncle Jim, you got to keep the crowd going until Robin can get here. And, you know, by that time, you know, I had some people for my panel, but the whole ballroom was full. And I'm like, well, what do you want me to talk about? What am I supposed to say? And they said, just keep them from getting reckless. So we started talking about anything I could think of to keep going until you got there. So by the time you got there, they were primed and ready to go because they would have done anything to get me off the stage. That was an interesting dilemma to be put in, but it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So without any further ado, I'm going to turn my Trek spurts loose, and I think Paul is dying to talk to you. So you got the mic, Paul.
Oh, thanks, Uncle Jim. I appreciate it. Robin Curtis, God, I can't believe it. I really can't. This is a treat for me. I'm not going to try to steal Eric's thunder, but I think that, Eric and I are really good friends. We live in the same neighborhood, and we have a lot in common. I think one of the things that we probably have in common is that you are, without question, our favorite Savick. I mean, there's just... I don't like to besmirch anyone's work, but when you came on and I saw, wait a minute, we have somebody new playing this character. I got to say, a young sprout that I was at the time, you were enchanting.
Oh.
And, I don't know, you just had this really, amazingly, we're used to Vulcans being a little bit detached, right? And somehow being, perceived as being cold. But you came across as being incredibly intelligent, but also really kind of hypnotically engaging at the same time, which is not easy to pull off, especially when it's a role somebody else originated. And you just ruled, sister. So really, really super delighted that we get a chance to chat like this. It's just wonderful. So
I wish you could see the look on my face. I'm just absolutely gobsmacked. Even all these years later, I'm overwhelmed by kind words like that. I really am.
What do you need?
What's that?
Sorry, carry
I'm
on.
Sorry, what did you say?
Robin, carry on, Robin. Go ahead.
Oh, no worries. Okay. I blame it all on Mr. Nimoy, honestly. He was such a caring and sensitive human being and director, guys. And anything I did remotely true to the character was because of him. And that's just the God's honest truth. I came to learn in that experience what a collaboration the work is between a director and an actor. And I'm certain that the whole vibe and interpretation of the character between Kirstie Alley and Nicholas Meyer was their collaboration and had very much, you know, the two of them. They were cooks in the kitchen, and then when the role was, you know, came to me, it was very much an invention of Leonard Nimoy and myself, if you will. And he was totally manipulating me. Do you know what I mean? I totally put myself in his hands. No ego, just please, you know what you're doing, and I don't have a clue. Help me here. And he came, you know, to the extent that I could get through the day, he came through. So I'm grateful that you feel that way.
You know, yeah, one other question that I'd love to ask you, because I'm getting the feeling from what you said and some bio stuff that you're retired. I don't understand why, because your voice is so fantastic. I mean, you've got such an incredible voice. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, I would love to see you continue to work. I mean, I think you'd be, you know, I can't do any more voiceover work. I'm book solid. That's what I would expect to hear from you. So.
Oh my gosh, aren't you kind? Well, I'll tell you what, a young man pulled me out of the ether this past summer. He reached out to me over 2 years ago and wrote to me about a film he was going to make, right? And I thought, oh, well, what are the chances of this ever getting made? And I responded, I said, well, just send me the script and if I like it, you know, I'll do it. And so I leaned in and did tell this young man I would be happy to participate in this film. But guys, I never thought he would get the money. And lo and behold, his name is Dave Campfield. He came through with the funding from his little movie. It's a horror film, right? But it's a psychological thriller. So I didn't have to kill anyone. Nobody had to kill me. I didn't have to watch anyone be killed. I didn't have to respond to blood. It was just exactly the lane that I was hoping for with regard to that genre. And the dude is a damn fine, talented filmmaker. I go down to Long Island to work for 3 days this past June. The film is almost finished. It's called Awaken the Reaper. And gosh darn it, but this scrappy crew that I worked with on this low-budget film was just a ton of fun, professional, committed, you know, long days. We're in the wee hours of the night, and they still cared. They still brought it. They still had energy. They still had standards. And I'll share the trailer with you after we hang up. It's on Facebook. I think it's going to be a lovely little film, but frankly, again, not my genre, but nevertheless, good filmmaking.
What's your character?
Well, I play a psychiatric nurse, right?
Oh, cool.
And the neighbor of one of the leading characters. And so I get pulled into the drama, his family's drama, because I live across the street from them and I don't want to say much more because again, it's a horror movie and a psychological thriller, but I worked with very talented people and was so impressed and tickled pink to have done it. And, so my point is to the gentleman who said something so lovely about being, you know, working still, I did get pulled out of the ether to do this little movie, and who knows what come of that. We shall see. So, thank you.
Well,
thank
I don't want to hog up too much of our other cuts for the time, but I did want to ask you, at some point during the show tonight, if there's time, you have got to tell us about your one-woman show, because that is maybe the best play title I've ever read. So, I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to let you read it. But that's an amazing title, and I want to hear all about how that came to be.
Well, I'm now a little embarrassed because I don't know which title. It had a title early on, and then I changed it. So
can I read what I'm seeing on your bio? Is it okay?
Go for it. Yeah, of course.
One I'm reading says, "Not My Bra, You Don't: The Sexual Odyssey of a 49-Year-Old Woman."
Well, yes.
That's what Wikipedia says.
Yes, yes. No, I appreciate that, and that's an old reference. So not my bra you don't was in reference to the bra burning that women did back in the day, apparently, to uh-huh. assert their desire for equal rights,
yeah.
and equal pay, et cetera. And I would remark, not my bra you don't, because I really needed it. I needed it, you know. I was without being too blunt. I'm one of those women, like most women, that has one breast slightly larger than the other, and the bra always kind of kept things even-handed. And I couldn't see the point in giving up something that helped for the sake of my rights and equal pay, et cetera. But anyway, so I changed it to a good girl because I was one of those gals, like so many women of my generation, that were raised to be good girls, right? Uh-huh. And, guys, my mother used to sing a song for me, and it went like this. Robin is a good girl. Everyone loves Robin. Daddy loves his Robin girl. Mommy loves her Robin. Everyone loves Robin. So that's the tie-in. Robin is a good girl.
Yeah.
The sexual odyssey of a 67-year-old woman, because, of course, the title changes as I age.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. So cool.
Yep.
All right. Well, it looks like we might be losing Paul, so I'm actually going to go ahead and take the reins here, Robin. Go ahead.
I have to go.
I wanted to have Andy jump in here because Robin said something that made me think of Andy, because Andy knows what it's like to work on a fan film type of thing.
To work on what?
Right. Andy, making fake Star Trek.
Yeah,
I thought maybe you could jump in here, and that's a good segue for you.
Absolutely. First, Robin, I would like to start by blowing some smoke as well. I grew up on Star Trek III. It was my absolute favorite of the films as a kid. Back when Star Trek 2 was a little too intense and Star Trek 4 hadn't come out. Star Trek 2 was my wheelhouse. And me and my brothers, we must have wore that tape out. And I absolutely adore you as Savick. And I enjoy your performance so much. And I wish we had seen more of you. But you were so good
Thank
in 3, and I just
you.
Want to say that.
Thank you so much. Oh, I'm so touched. Yes, go ahead.
Awesome. It's true. I've done fan film as well. Jim is referring to is I did I wrote a book called Making Fake Star Trek about my experiences doing fan films. A fan film called Star Trek New Voyages, where I played Chekhov, and I got to work with Walter Koenig, who we did a scene Chekhov to Chekhov, and I worked with George Takei as well. It was a lot of fun. It was really cool. And to speak about the uniform you got to wear, I mean, fan films have come a long way. The people making them are pretty amazing when it comes to sets and to uniforms. Did you ever get any kind of offer to make a fan film? Had you any interest to make a fan film? At this point, unfortunately, the boat has sailed. They don't allow anyone with previous experience in Star Trek to do that. But I think that could have been a fun opportunity to see you again as Savick outside of a convention stage.
Yes, I so appreciate the question because I feel as though the character was just sort of left, in suspense. Some very interesting ideas were introduced with regard to Savick. And her connection to Spock, et cetera, and the crew. And then, there she was on Jane Wyatt, or on Vulcan, excuse me, waving goodbye with Jane Wyatt, never to be seen again. I think I would have considered doing a fan film. I wasn't asked. And I have total respect and admiration for, the creativity and these independent projects that people have the, God bless them, the dedication and the chutzpah and the wherewithal to get it made and get it done. I have such respect for that. So how and when, you know, Savick might or could ever reappear in the world of Star Trek again, I can't imagine. Who was it that I was talking to that thought that this should be something they should pursue? I can't remember. But
whoever was, I agree with them. I mean, there's so many Star Trek shows happening right now, and Vulcans have long lifespans. Savick could easily show up on any of them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It is a lovely creative lane if someone should decide to pursue it. And I would be tickled pink to be asked if they thought it was appropriate. So yeah. I'm not dead yet, you know.
Sounds like a petition to me. I think we need to start a petition. Come on.
Very, very sweet of you to even think. God knows the people who are like Star Trek have certainly had quite a voice in its history. Do you know what I mean? Prompting those on the other end of the line to give them what they want. So I would never squash a movement.
Yep. Particularly with the internet these days, right? Like it allows kind of a quicker movement of that and a more forceful movement of that if somebody ignites the fire in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, speaking of Vulcans, I just have loved the work that Ethan Peck is doing. And who is the young lady, guys, the actress who plays his love interest? I don't know her name. I apologize.
Are you talking about Jess Bush, who plays
Nurse Chapel?
T'Pring.
Yes, T'Pring. No. I'm talking about the current Spock.
The Vulcan.
Ethan Peck's opposite. I just think the two of them together are lovely, and have just brought all the nuances and all. I think the writing is wonderful, and I think the character development is incredible. And they are making Leonard Nimoy proud of the Vulcan lore. I just think they're wonderful.
Totally.
Yeah, they absolutely are.
Yeah,
Robin,
Sandu,
I want to ask another question before I pass the baton on to some of the other Trekspurts. This one is a controversial question. It's going to rile people up. You worked on the original movies, and you worked in Next Generation. So, Kirk or Picard?
Well, I would need to understand from what point of reference you're asking the question. I have loved Star Trek since I was a little girl. So I've known Kirk, if you will, and it revisited. You know, one of the things the pandemic did was, keeping us all isolated from one another, was to force us to reach out to each other in other ways. And so I was invited to conversations like this, and I thought to myself, I really should go back, and I should watch some of the things I've done. I don't know that I had seen The Next Generation, Gambits 1 and 2, since I first did them in 96.
Really?
And I don't know that I had watched Star Trek 3 for a couple of decades. So, and then I went back and I watched episodes I thought I remembered from when I was a child, from when I was 11 and 12.
Uh-huh.
And I was smitten all over again. Bill Shatner as Kirk in the original series was so, so, so sexy. And
he's
every episode.
Charming as hell.
What's that?
He is charming as hell. It's true.
Charming as hell. And I loved his all of the I can't explain it, the erotic inclinations just boiling underneath the surface. And the women were so hot and alluring and to some extent objectified, but I was just 11 years old and all I wanted, you know, I mean, I was drooling on the shag carpet back in the day, watching these episodes just infused with so much eroticism and I don't even know how else to say it. So there's that layer to the Kirk or Picard question. But then when you stand opposite Patrick Stewart and you do a scene with him, you feel without a doubt, you are in the presence of such charisma, such talent, such packed energy. The dude is really breathtaking in his focus and concentration and talent. So it in and of itself was a completely different experience. I just hoped I stood my, you know, stood my own ground with him and met him toe to toe because it was so easy to be intimidated and sort of crushed underneath the magnitude of his charisma. The dude has really got such an amazing presence. And so I view them from completely different points of view. Never really got to have a straight conversation with either one of them. Bill Shatner never gave me the time of day, and I was just too alien with the wig and the eyebrows and the forehead and the outfit. What's that?
Was it weird working with Bill after you had grown up watching him and drooling on the shag carpet?
Yes. I mean, but he literally was quite removed, guys. Like he wasn't even on the set the way you are when you're, you know, in between shots. You know, everybody knows when you work on films, the greatest magnitude of time is spent hanging around, and then you work briefly for a few charged minutes, and then you sit again. And Bill was not there. He simply wasn't there. So he would just walk on when the lights had already been placed and the blocking had already been, you know, struck. And so there were a matter of seconds to simply action, do the scene, and off he went. So there wasn't time for even the most, you know, benign small talk. So I didn't even have a chance. Do you know what I mean? To
that's a shame.
It was all so. I think I was so caught up in, again, the Savick, the pressure of playing a Vulcan and not feeling like I was nailing it naturally, that I was too consumed by that to be bowled over by him one way or another. Mm-hmm. I was bowled over by the whole thing. Do you know what I mean? And I just paid attention to Leonard and did what I was told and prayed to God I didn't, you know, get a pink slip. No joke. Yeah. The first couple of weeks, sure. I thought I would be fired for sure. I thought I was going to be fired. Yeah.
Wow.
I just did not have the confidence I was nailing it at all. Yeah.
We have a caller on the
intense.
Line. That has a question for you, Robin.
What's
so
that?
Let me see if I can get this thing to answer the phone properly.
Hello.
And. Let's see. Hello, thank you.
Somebody said hello.
Your name and where you calling us from tonight?
Hi, it's Edwin. Hello? I'm calling from Connecticut.
It's Edwin.
Edwin.
Hi, Robin. How are you doing?
Well, sweetheart, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. It's so good to hear you. And it was so wonderful having you and Badge together, reunited after 40 years. Such a treat.
Yeah. And you took such great care of us. It was a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I can't say it enough, really. I wish you guys much success. And if anybody's listening and considering going, you'll have a ball. And if actors are listening, go be a guest. They treat you like they treat you like family. So,
I was going to say, I'm not with that event anymore, but I believe there are some people reaching out to you about the Quiet Sci-Fi Corner convention in Pomfret. So hopefully we can get you and Badge out to that. And that kind of brings me to my – I'm actually involved with them. So if we're able to get you and Badge out, that would be wonderful. I think that's going to be June 29th. Yes. And also that leads to my sort of question, really, is this year, like June 1, it's the 40th anniversary of Star Trek III. So, you know, it would be wonderful to have some kind of a celebration. And, like, you know, if we can get you, we'll definitely have a celebration. But also, do you know, can you say if there's, like, anything being planned officially by, like, CBS or Paramount? Because it's quite a milestone. You know, we have, like, Star Trek the Motion Picture, 40 years, 45 years. We've had Wrath of Khan a couple of years back, the 40 years. So I think, you know, Star Trek III really deserves a shout out and really deserves a celebration. I think, as I said to you and Badge last year, it's my, not just my favorite Star Trek film, it's my favorite film period. I just love the movie. I love the themes of, like, going the extra mile for friendship and everything. As I said to you, you've become my favorite Savick because of what you said of Leonard's direction of how to act like a Vulcan. And I really got that. I guess I'm wondering, hopefully we can see you at the end of June at the Pomfret event in Connecticut. But also, I just wondered if you know of any planned events for the 40th anniversary. I think it's something that really needs to be celebrated, you know. And how do you feel with it? Like, you know, it's a milestone anniversary for this movie.
Right,
it's great.
Oh, well, no, Edwin, I appreciate everything you've said. Thank you. I have every reason to believe we can make that happen at the end of June for sure. So I'm optimistic about that. And to be honest, I'm a little surprised that there is absolutely nothing that I'm aware of honoring this anniversary. And I was even saying to my pal, Lolita Facho, who helps with all of this, and she worked at Paramount many years ago, and she's still very engaged with it. You know, I said, I don't understand why not one human being has said, hey, you know, while they're still alive, let's get Robin and Bill and George and Walter and those that are still here together to celebrate
Lloyd.
The 40th anniversary. Yeah, and Christopher Lloyd, that's right.
Yeah.
There has not been a peep, nothing from anyone, not CreationCon, not CBS.
Yeah.
Incredible. You know, I, as with everything in showbiz, you know, you kind of have to just say, hey, you know, it's the way it is, and it's not personal. But Edwin, to your point, it just makes me a little sad that no one is choosing to kind of raise a glass to this milestone. So we'll see. I think it isn't in the works, and I don't think that it will be, but we'll see.
Well,
maybe somebody will surprise us.
I don't want to hog any more question time, but I just wanted to comment, really, that the Leonard Nimoy Theatre opened recently in Los Angeles, and Susan Nimoy was very heavily behind it, and they had a grand opening, and Zachary Quinto was invited as well, and it would just be wonderful if they had a screening of Star Trek III and could gather just some of the guests stars there. I don't know if Susan Nimoy has any clout with regards to that. I just think it would be a one, because it was Leonard's first film, I believe, he directed. It would just, even if Paramount don't celebrate it as the 40th anniversary of Star Trek, it would just be a nice milestone to honor Leonard Nimoy, I think. So, you know, it's food for thought. If anyone out there listening has connections, it would be wonderful to see. And I sincerely hope to see you later in the year.
Wonderful. And thank you for bringing my attention to the theater. Edwin, I didn't even realize this had happened, and I've just now Googled it. Yes, it's the UCLA Nimoy Theater on Westwood Boulevard, right near the UCLA campus. How exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, well-deserved.
Yeah.
Well-deserved.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Yep. I will ring off now. I'm listening to the show on my laptop, but I'll ring off now so other people have a chance to call in. But it's wonderful reconnecting with you, Robin, and I sincerely hope we see you later in the year for the
Bonfire. Thank you. You will. I'll see you in June,
wonderful.
Edwin.
Wonderful.
The best.
I look
live long,
to
baby.
That.
Live long.
Okay. Take care. Live long. Love long and party.
That's right.
Take care, and I'll see you soon. Thanks a lot, Robin.
Bye-bye, love.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling, Edwin.
Bye-bye.
Edwin, he's awesome. This is why
I have loved my relationship with Star Trek because of wonderful people. All these years meeting wonderful people and connecting. Wow. Very nice, Jim. Thank you for this. Every show
I end it with saying Star Trek fans are the best fans, and that is true. Before we're getting down on the clock here, so I wanted to turn the microphone over to Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Robin. Yeah, it's complete. This has been so exciting.
I'm sorry for that crack earlier. I was just teasing you.
No. Well, it was well deserved, and also I share Paul's supposition that you are the best Sabic, but that's beside the point. I want to ask you about some other stuff. So first of all, I want to say that I'm very excited about this Awaken the Reaper film because, you know, I dabble into horror every now and then, and to have you give it such a, such emphasis and to be excited about it, that gets me very excited about it. I'm very excited to see what happens there. I also wanted to ask you, a long time ago, back in 2007, if you can believe it or not, you were involved in another little project that was outside of film. It was a podcast, and it was a podcast series called Starship Excelsior. And you were in a couple of episodes for that, playing Commander Savick, right? Not Lieutenant Savick. So I wanted to just ask you about that experience. How did you get involved in that? Did you enjoy it? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I did enjoy it, and I was very tickled to have been asked, and it was nice, Eric, of group to come back to Savick this much later in time and with more confidence and of course voiceover, which is so interesting, is in and of itself sort of a challenge because you're trying to infuse the sounds you're making with the images and the story and in people's imagination to provoke it. So anyway, I was surprised to be asked, and I was actually in a very professional sound booth doing it with my directors right there, giving me guidance for the interpretation, and I was very pleased. James Haney, I believe, or Heaney, is that his name? Was in charge, and Jim. How do you say Jim's last name?
Or Heaney. Yeah.
Magadi, Magada.
Something like that.
They were both leading the project, so to speak, and I enjoyed it. You know, I mean, I think that's what's been an interesting thing about my association with Star Trek is it's pulled me in the most interesting, like unexpected, you couldn't imagine directions. You know, there's something right now, I'm not even sure what I'm able to say about it, that might take me to L.A. at the end of, beginning of February, early March, that has to do with the Roddenberry archives. Mm. So it's like, they may not have revived Savick officially, but I've had a blast. At conventions, I've had a blast with these odd little projects that come my way. For somebody who doesn't, I'm so opposed to self-promotion, guys. For someone, who backs away from the most powerful person in the room, I've done okay in life. Someone has pulled me along, and I've been where I needed to be, and I've enjoyed all the various projects that have happened for me. I just recently narrated the 50th anniversary promotional video for Syracuse Stage. Mm-hmm. I was so pleased to be asked because I'm on the board, and it was kind of the first time they tapped into my my talents beyond just possibly raising money for the organization. Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe one day I'll act again on the stages of Syracuse. You sort of fall into things, and it's a lot of fun. And I put the Star Trek Excelsior project in that category. You know, it's just something really fun that came along, and I enjoyed coming out to play.
Well, there's no doubt that you have an electric personality. This is all our first times meeting you on the air, and you know, you're automatically engaging and sort of interesting to listen to. So it does not surprise me that people want to continue to bring you into side projects or other things along the way. I said Starship Excelsior, by the way, started in 2007, but you were actually on it just not too long ago, 2016, I guess, is when
2016, that's exactly right.
All right, well, so I always love to pivot just a little bit away from Star Trek and just say I'm going to ask you two questions, and I'll ask them both at the same time so that you can sort of compare and contrast. The first question is, what does Robin Curtis do for fun? And the second question is,
okay,
what does Savick do for, quote, fun?
Oh, God. Okay. Well, Robin is a pickleball nut. So,
that's very big in Portland here. Very big.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. My brother and his wife, and then ultimately my other brother and his wife, I have two brothers and their wives, and I adore the four of them, had been trying to get me to play for at least a year, year and a half. And I was like, no, I'm good. I've got my workouts. I walk a fast pace up a hill, very picturesque spot here in Casanova. You know, I had my thing. I had my routine. And finally, I joined them one day. And I was absolutely hooked. And once I got the hang of it, I couldn't get enough. And I play every day, guys. I play every day for at least 2 hours.
Wow.
It's crazy. And in the summer, I'll go out and play for 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours at the end of the day.
Wow.
I have endless love and appreciation for it. I'm laughing. I'm squealing. It's athletic. It's balletic. It's the camaraderie's insane. You know, pickleball people are inclusive. It would be everything Gene Roddenberry would believe in. You know,
totally.
You don't take the court and reserve it and the four of you play and you don't let people play in. You play in. You invite the newcomers. You may be an experienced foursome and you let the new guy come in and you're kind and you're generous and you guide them and help them and, you know, you pull back your game to make them feel confident. It's a game of such goodwill and fun. I can't shut up about it. And I think because I'm musical, there's something about it, the syncopation of the light whistle ball on the paddle and the arrhythmic,
the rhythm. Yeah.
Oh, the rhythm. Yeah. I mean, the sounds it makes and the way when it gets going fast, I get laughing so hard I can barely play.
Oh, my God.
And
I can totally see that.
People on the court laughing.
I love it.
Anyway, it's just and I've never been in better shape. I feel fabulous. And that's really I'm grateful to say that at 67. I've never been more active. And I've never had more energy, and so I'm in it to win it. The other thing I do for fun is that I'm on Bumble, mm-hmm. I'm on Hinge, mm-hmm. and I just hired a matchmaker end of 2003. Oh yes, I put down a couple of bucks. Let me tell you,
nice.
And I invested in someone to find my guy, right? My guy for now, anyway. My partner for the hope for the rest of my natural born life. But in any case, I said to myself, gosh darn it, I'm not going, you know, down the Rhine on a Viking cruise.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, watching the Northern Lights in Reykjavik. You know, nobody's taking me on a train across the Canadian Rockies, for Christ's sake. So I'm going to invest in the person to get me that person so that I can meet that person and do those things. So,
oh, my God. I love it.
So I'm... Yeah. Oh, and I just took a little share in an apartment in the city, in New York City. So I've let the matchmaker know she can pick me up with a fella from Manhattan.
Manhattan man.
Yeah.
Little cha-ching.
Yeah. I mean, I lead a modest lifestyle, but I got offered for a very small sum of money, the ability to kind of share an apartment with a couple of four other people. And, you know, we use a Google Calendar and we go down at various times and stuff, and it's a lot cheaper than getting a hotel, I can tell you.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, so there's that. But now what would Savick do for fun? Oh, God. You know, I can't even come up with something good.
I know.
What I like to say,
an unfair question. I'll admit
that I'm the one who took care of Spock. I did Spock in the cave.
Yeah.
And as long as I've known the character, that's about as much fun as he can remember having. That was one of the cool things about watching the film again. I thought, for some reason, because there's so much death in it, I remembered it being, I thought, a serious, kind of depressing movie. And it's not that at all. Do you believe this? I guess I must have been so arrested by my nerves and the experience itself, and then the fact that, you know, Genesis dies, David dies, we think Spock is dead, but then he's reborn. And illusions die. The ship died. It was wonderful to go back, watch it again, and realize, oh, it's very life affirming, and it's uplifting, and yes, people made mistakes, but on the whole, it's hopeful. It's like Star Trek does. It leaves you with a positive optimism and an appetite for more.
And Robin, there's a complexity to that movie that I think does not exist in some of the other movies. So, for example, you're just talking about, Savick taking care of Spock. So that is a complex scenario, right? Because, A, you're crossing cultures, and so you're crossing into a culture that has this kind of, hormone-based thing that happens every so often, and
yes.
So you kind of have to accept that your frame of reference is a little bit different from a human frame of reference, right, to start with.
Right, yeah.
And then Savick is the one who kind of empathetically guides Spock through that process, which to me makes her such an interesting Vulcan. So everybody talks about, you were talking about Ethan Peck earlier and how he's kind of knocking it out of the park with Spock these days. To me, your Savick is the kind of, aside from like way back in the cage days, it's the genesis of our first empathetic Vulcan that kind of takes on that role of, oh my God, here's somebody who is part of my culture. I need to take care of them. If I don't, serious things could happen. So it's going to happen, and we get to see it on screen, and somehow it manages to be like a little bit erotic and sexual without being that way at all, which I think just is such an amazing complexity to that film that I just, I get the whales, I get the Wrath of Khan, but I do think Star Trek III has this kind of extra level that people have to sort of think about when they watch the film.
That was fascinating listening to you, honestly. And I get it. I get what you mean. And certainly that moment for Stephen Manley and I, the other actor and I, was, it loomed in front of us on the schedule with great trepidation. And we were both so grateful when Leonard took us aside and showed us something, emotion, a physical gesture so simple.
Yeah.
And specific. And he and I, it was so important to us to imbue that with everything you just talked about all at once. The intimacy of it, the necessity of it, survive or not survive of it, the eroticism of it, the all of it. I mean, it just was so many things at once, and you're so worried playing a, and I'm putting air quotes up now, a love scene. It's not a love scene, but yet,
it kind of is.
It's exactly. Yeah. There's a fire going in the background,
Sure.
Anyway, thank you. I appreciate your your take on it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, it's just been a pleasure. We have one more Trekspert left and a few minutes left in the podcast, so thank you so much for taking my questions. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm going to pass this mic over to Charles.
Hey, Charles.
Oh, thank you, Eric. Thank you,
in
Robin.
Vegas.
Yep. Well, you immediately you got in the conversation. You answered one of my questions in there.
Okay.
And I was wondering, is Rob Curtis a Star Trek fan? Because some of our Star Trek people are fans and some of them are not. And I can tell you are one of our fans.
Well, you know, listen, I don't deserve too much credit here. I really love the original series. I've watched maybe a handful of episodes of The Next Generation, to be fair. I've watched probably more of what is the name of the series with Ethan?
Strange New World.
There you go. Love Anson Mount. Love Rebecca.
Yes.
The cast is just divine. Really good. Really good. And the writing is just uncanny in my mind. And I was also pulled back into the franchise guys when Chris Pine and Zachary and that group first came on the scene. I said to my partner, "Ooh, Star Trek got sexy back." You know, it just came back with all the frills that is Star Trek and such ingenious casting those people for their counterparts. I'm a fan. I mean, I'm a fan in my measured, limited way. Absolutely, absolutely.
And we were talking about, we got to get Robin back in Star Trek. We got to do it. I started thinking, it's like, I got an idea where to put her. How would I do that? And I realized, I got it. Bring Robin back in bring Robin back in Lower Decks and have her work with a character on there called T'Lyn.
Are you watching Lower Decks, Robin?
Character.
No.
Give her a little context, Charles.
Okay, Lower Decks we're always used Star Trek shows are always dealing with the people on the bridge, the officers. Lower Decks deals with the crew that's below decks, the ensigns.
And it's animated.
And it's animated. And we just got a new character on there, which we got glimpsed, got it for this past season. But the season before, she's a Vulcan, and she's on the ship, and she's trying to come up with ideas to solve plans. And her the captain's on there, like, you got too many ideas. We're sending you off. We're going to, you got too much going on. So that she ends up being put onto a Federation ship. But she's still got that straight-laced Vulcan to her.
So you can think in terms of, like, Robin, if you were watching classic comedy, there would be one actor and then there would be the straight man, and she is absolutely the straight man. Like, every time somebody makes a joke, she's the one who delivers the deadpan punchline who, you know, like, you can imagine a Vulcan in comedy. That is what T'Lyn is right now. And I totally agree with Charles. I think an interaction between her and Savick would be amazing on the show.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think that would be great. And we've got so many Star Trek alumni who've come to Lower Decks. You get a chance. If you don't mind the comedy, take a look at it. It's a fun series.
Where would I find it?
It's on Paramount.
Paramount, okay.
Same place you get Strange New World if you go streaming.
Yeah, I do. I must have Paramount, guys, coupled with something else, so I'm not aware that it's Paramount. Do you know what I mean?
Go look.
Yeah.
Go look.
Paramount is like the home of Star Trek these days, so if you want to watch any classic TNG or TOS or, you know, Deep Space Nine, whatever, if you want to watch a movie, it's all on Paramount Plus these days. I think.
Okay.
Although it switches sometimes.
Okay. Well, and if I have cable, then I've also been able to record it, haven't I, or no?
No, it's streaming only.
Okay, it's only streaming only.
Paramount Plus is streaming only.
Got it. Okay.
I also thought of a point. I know where you might be able to get that 40th anniversary panel going. How about Star Trek Las Vegas? They're always looking for guest stars to show up, and they're always looking for panel ideas.
Well, I've been invited to it, darling, but nobody's suggested that's going to happen.
I would go in and either for you or representative to go in and contact creation for Las Vegas and say, hey, we got an idea. How about doing a Star Trek 3 panel with some of the original people from the movie? And I bet you they'd love the idea because they're always looking for panel ideas.
Yeah, no, it's a good suggestion, and I will certainly, you know, put it out there. Just added, yeah, I'm looking at, wow.
Yeah.
They've got everybody.
And I just realized the fact on my schedule, I thought it would conflict with the beginning of the school year. And since they moved it up this year to the beginning of August, I get to go to all 4 days.
Yay.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, I get to see Ireland.
I'm interested to see who I can run into, especially people I've talked on the show to. Like
interesting.
You.
Well, I see Walter. I don't see George. I see Bill.
I'm sure George usually makes most of them.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a good thought. It's a very good thought, and we'll have to see if somebody seizes the moment.
And if Vaj can make it, I'm sure they'd be happy to have him come in.
There we go.
Oh gosh.
Dynamic
yeah.
duo.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, honey. Thank you out there in Vegas land.
Well, thank you. And I think since our show's about over, I'll leave it at that. Or to say thank you for coming on. This has been a great conversation.
Uncle Jim, thank you, sweetheart. Thank you, Charles and Paul and Eric and Andy. Great quintet.
Yeah, you were super fun.
I so appreciate the invitation. Guys, I wish you the best 2024, and perhaps our paths will cross out there at some point.
Thank you so much, Robin.
So.
It was a blast talking to you. Thank you
Take
so much.
Take care, everybody. You bet.
Bye-bye.
Mwah.
Good night. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. That was Robin Curtis Savick from Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 4. So we're going to go over a little bit, but that's okay because I wanted to share some memories of Star Trek III. And one of them for me, Star Trek III came out on, I'm going to date myself here, but that's okay. Very long on the tooth. Star Trek III came out on my 17th birthday. And I went to see it with my girlfriend, who is now my wife, Karen. And we went to see Star Trek III on opening night for my birthday. And one of our favorite lines in the movie, one of the things that we always talk about that got us, you know how William Shatner does his thing, you know? And when he's kicking, when he kicks Christopher Lloyd off the cliff and he...
Oh, yeah.
He's like, enough of you. And he kicks him in the Shatner style of, you know, my wife not being a Star Trek fan, even she laughed at that. And even to this day, when we watch Star Trek 3, we'll both do, I have had enough of you, like in Shatner-y. And that's just one of those memories from that movie that sticks in my brain. And when I met at Trek Conoroga last year, when Star Trek 3 came out, it was at the height of the home video wars that were going on, and the beta and VHS were battling it out to see who was going to control the market. And I went into Montgomery Ward's which is an old store that used to sell stuff that's gone now. There's another dating of myself. And if you bought a Sony top-load Betamax, you got a free copy of Star Trek 3 and a Star Trek 3 poster. That's all I needed to hear. I bought it right away, got my Star Trek 3, wore it out, and guess what? I brought that Star Trek 3 video poster to Trek Conoroga and had Robin sign it, and it's hanging right here on my wall in front of me. And, yep, that's my Star Trek 3 story. Does anybody else have any Star Trek 3 story they want to share?
I'll just say the first time that so I don't necessarily remember when it came out because I was 11 years old and I was much more of a Star Wars guy when I was young, but I kind of feel like that's how it goes. And I'll probably get in trouble for this, but I feel like you sort of initially love the wars and then you sort of grow into the Trek. And the thing that I remember about it was the destruction of the Enterprise and just how, like, crazy it was that they would blow up a ship. It was like stunning to me, and the way that they kind of show it, like, you know, I don't know, fire and electricity sort of going across the hull as the thing is, but I just thought it was really a cool moment the first time I ever saw that movie. And I did see it, I don't think I saw it on Betamax, I probably saw it on VHS, but I probably saw it about, I don't know, 2 or 3 years after it came out, so not in the theater, but I was right that whenever it was released on video, that's when I saw it, because I had a friend that was very much into Star Trek and he was collecting those things right off the bat. So yeah, I love that scene in particular.
And I think, like we said before the show, I think Star Trek III doesn't get taken seriously enough.
That's what I was saying to Robin, was that there's like a real complexity to that movie that I don't think exists in some of the simpler movies, and I think that you kind of have to dig to get there, but it's in there, and, you know.
Too many people dismiss it as just one of the odd movies. Oh,
yeah,
an odd movie. You can ignore it. You can, you know, it's in between 4 and 2, and then those movies get a lot more attention, so they kind of forget about 3, but it is part of the unofficial Genesis trilogy.
Yeah, totally.
And I think it's a major part of that one. I mean, it continues threads from Wrath of Khan and sets up threads for Star Trek IV, and it's indispensable in that matter. The rebirth of Spock, the death of David, the destruction of the Enterprise. I mean, and the continuing the weaponizing of the Genesis device. All that stuff is vital to the next chapter in the Star Trek film, and then the death of David and the death of Spock continues on past Star Trek IV.
Andy, it's the Empire Strikes Back of, you know, the Star Trek 2, 3, 4 trilogy, right? It has all
absolutely
the same
elements. It continues the human adventure end title that started in Star Trek I, which I thought was so cool. I always as a kid thought, oh, we got to get another one of those. The human adventure continues again.
Well,
and the thing is, with Star Trek II, we sat there and it's like, Spock's dead. How could we lose? And we slowly regain Spock through this episode. So it's like, yes, we're gaining one of our characters back, but are we getting him back? And just what's going to happen with Spock?
The amount of sacrifice it takes to get him back, you realize how big his loss was, more so in the third movie than in the second movie, because of what it costs to get him back.
Well, and it's the balance
and then,
like, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, and then the needs of the few suddenly become important in Star Trek III, which I just think is freaking brilliant. It's like a mirror image of Star Trek II. Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's not forget.
I don't know if any of you know this. There's a friend of mine told me that in England, when this movie released, that they had very clever posters for parking near the cinemas that said, park here, otherwise by the time you find parking, they will have found him, regarding the search for Spock. By the time you find parking, they'll have found him already. And I thought, oh, my God, that was brilliant. But that was apparently in England, so we missed out on that in the States.
And one of the best scenes in Star Trek III often gets overlooked, and that's Uhura with Mr. Adventure eating out of her hand.
Yeah.
You know,
such a great moment for her.
You know, Uhura didn't have a lot to do in the movie, but the one scene that she did get, she chewed it well, you know.
And Chekhov gets to speak Russian. He actually gets to speak Russian in Star Trek III.
That's right,
Nouveau,
he does.
Nouveau.
Yep. I wanted to have Robin to say Admiral David is dead, but I forgot to ask. and of course Christopher Lloyd, great Scott, what a Klingon, huh?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I mean,
now,
really
nowadays
to playing a serious film.
Overlooked.
Well, and now the fact is, it's years later that we now joke about him having the two time machines.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think Edwin is right. I think they did an anniversary edition of the motion picture. They did it for the Wrath of Khan. They should do it for Star Trek III.
Yeah.
They really should. So we went a little bit over time, guys. I apologize, but I think it was worth it. You know,
yes.
It was just a couple, you know.
Definitely.
Star Trek III is overlooked a lot, and Robin is so awesome. Absolutely a treasure, a joy. And you got to meet her in person. She's so bubbly and lively and fun.
She sounds
She's incredible. Absolutely incredible. So that wraps up our show, guys. I apologize. We went over just a tiny bit, but that's okay. Sometimes we can. So I want to say thank you to Edwin for giving us a call tonight. Thank you so much, Edwin. And thank you to Paul for hanging out in Trek Talking with us tonight. And thank you to our very own Eric for hanging out in Trek Talking with us. Thank you, Eric. And thank you so much to Charles for hanging out in Trek Talking with us. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, thank you. You've been hitting great guests this year.
I've been on a roll. I've been on a roll. I admit it. And thank you so much to the one and only Andy Bray, a.k.a. Mr. Chekhov. Thank you, Andy.
Absolutely. My pleasure. The chance to talk to Robin, amazing. So thank you.
There he is. And, of course, we couldn't have done it without Robin Curtis. So thank you so much to Robin for taking time out of her busy schedule to chat with us. And I want to let you guys know this is an odd Tuesday show, but that's okay. Thursday, we're going to tackle Majomania. That's right. We're going to talk about Majel Barrett and her addition to the Star Trek world, all the characters she's played. We're going to have a lot of fun just talking about Majel. And I have some memories from conventions that I'm going to share with you guys about Majel as well. And, of course, on Monday, we're going to be doing Book Nook. We're going to be talking about Patrick Stewart's memoir, Making It So. And we have a copy of that book to give away to one lucky listener. So you're going to have to tune in and see who won that book and see what we thought about the book. And this is going to be a different Book Nook because technically it's not a Book Nook. It's a audio nook, this particular show. So we're going to talk about Patrick Stewart's audio book. So you want to tune in for that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And the first, we're going to be talking with Greg Sargent, who played the Andorian security officer Thon in Star Trek Enterprise's Andorian incident episode. He was one of the Andorian security officers in that episode. So that's our upcoming schedule. Please head over to trektalking.com and check it out. You won't miss anything over there. Everything you need to know is there, and you can find everything you want at Trek Talking on Facebook. So I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. Thank you so much for listening. Star Trek fans are the best fans. Please, everybody, stay safe and be good to each other. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Live long and prosper.
Das vidanya.
Space, the final frontier. These are the continuing voyages of the starship Enterprise. Her ongoing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations. to boldly go where no man has gone before.